Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money. And hold that money. And practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marches never changed anything.
Adam Clayton Powell, for the first time, was defeated. Charles Rangel won in a very close election. Within a few years, Adam Clayton Powell would contract cancer and die.
If we must die, let us not die like hogs, end in some inglorious spot. What use is an extra year or two to the man who kills the time that God has given him?
Much of the story of Adam Clayton Powell is on display here in this anteroom of the Abyssinia Baptist Church. But there are many parts of the Adam Powell story that you cannot see hanging up on the walls, mainly the ironies in his life. Isn't it ironic that Adam Powell was such a loud voice that few people would listen to? Perhaps if his loud voice had been heeded on the question of police corruption, there may not have been a Knapp Commission. If his loud voice about government corruption had been heeded, there may not have been a Watergate. If his loud voice against hypocrisy on Capitol Hill had been heeded, perhaps Wayne Hayes and Tom Dodd and Earl Butz and Carl Albert and countless others might have not have been caught in such embarrassing situations. Adam Clayton Powell represents still another chapter in a long story of black militant fighters against oppression and injustice here in America. He wasn't perfect. He had his faults, but don't we all? The point is, he was a fighter. If he did play He worked harder than he played. Most of all, he was a fighter.
As I know here, you're in trouble. Where it says about 30% are unemployed. That's why I'm working hard to get this surplus food here. Some of you say to me, well, I'm not like you. I'm not a congressman. I haven't got education. I haven't got work. But you're a human being. And you know what you've got? You've got in your hand the power to use your vote and to use even those few cents you get from welfare to spend them only where you want to spend them. A young slave boy stood one day before the greatest ruler of his day. And God said to Moses, what's in your hand? And Moses said, Lord, only I've got a stick, that's all. He said, well, let me use what's in your hand. And God used that slave boy with a stick in his hand to divide the Red Seas, march through a wilderness, bring water out of rocks, manna from heaven, and bring his people to freedom land. What's in your hand? What's in your hand? George Washington Carver, who was so frail that he was traded for a broken-down horse as a slave boy. And George Washington Carver, sitting in the science laboratory at Tuskegee, told me, he said, Dr. Powell, he said, I just go out on the field each morning at 5 o'clock, and I let God guide me. And I bring back these little things and work them over my laboratory. And that man did more to revolutionize the agricultural science of peanuts and of cotton and sweet potato than any other human being in the field of agricultural science. What's in your hand? Just let God use you, that's all. What's in your hand? I've got a string in my hand, that's all, and I'm flying a kite. And way up in the heavens, lightning strikes it, and I, Benjamin Franklin, discover for the first time the possibilities of electricity with a string in my hand. What's in your hand? Little hunchback sitting in a Roman jail. I haven't got anything in my hand but an old quill pen, but God says, write what I tell you to write. Paul wrote, I have run my race with patience. I've finished my course. I've kept the faith. Henceforth has laid up for me. What's in your hand, little boy? All I've got is a slingshot. And the enemies of my people are great and big and more numerous than we are. Well, little David, go down to the brook and pick out a few stones and come on back and close your eyes if you want to and pull back that slingshot and let it go. And David killed the biggest enemy, the leader of the giants, against his people, and his people became free, just letting God guide a stone in his hand. And a few years passed, and David is a king. And God says, what's in your hand? He said, I've got a harp in my hand. He said, well, David, play on your harp. And he played, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. Maketh me to lie down in green pastures. Leadeth me beside still waters. Yea, though I walk through the valley in the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil. What's in your hand? What's in your hand? Man hanging on a cross? I've got two nails in my hand. Father! I stretch my hand to thee. No other help I know. If thou withdrawest thyself from me, whither shall I go? And that man, with two nails in his hand, spit history in hair, B.C. and A.D. And what's in your hand tonight, people of Cambridge? You've got God in your hand, and he'll let you win because he's on your side and one with God, always in the majority. So walk with him and talk with him and work with them and stick together and fight together. And with God's hand in your hand, the victory will be accomplished here sooner than you dreamed, sooner than you hoped, sooner than you prayed for, sooner than you imagined. Good night and God bless you.
Now learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, This man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it, just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a chap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Well, hey, folks, and welcome to Solar Cabin Channel. I've got a neat little project for you. I call the Multi-Shack. This is one of my homeless housing solutions designs. And some of you probably don't know this, but I was homeless twice in my life. The first time was when I was trying to get into college, and I had lost my job and was waiting for my college funding to come in. And so I had to live in my truck. I lived in the cab of my truck for almost 2 months while I waited for my college funding to come in. And then again later in life when I got divorced and didn't have a job and was trying to get off grid, I lived for almost 2 years in a camp trailer. And, you know, there's a lot of people that, homeless people that have their pride. They want to maintain their independence. They don't want to live on welfare. They don't want to be caught up in the system. And, you know, all they need is a simple shelter, you know, someplace to get out of the cold, to get out of the wind, to get out of the rain, while they get back on their feet. And so I know there's a lot of organizations out there that are helping the homeless, churches, nonprofits, and things like that. So I came up with this small structure design, which I call the multi-shack, because it has actually multi-uses to it. And it can be built very affordably. You can build this entire shack for under $200. And it is built on wheels. It can be put on either a 4x6 trailer, or you can build it on casters. Casters are a lot less expensive, but it still allows you to move this unit around. So you could store, you know, a bunch of these on a church parking lot, and then just when you need them, you can move them out to wherever you want the person to be using them. Casters are 4-inch casters. Each caster will hold up to 240 pounds, so they'll more than handle the weight for this structure here. Now, this structure is 6'5" from the peak to the bottom, 6'5", so and even a tall person can stand upright inside this structure. The door is 1'6" wide and about 5'3" to the peak up there in the door, and the structure is 4 foot wide approximately and about 6 foot long, about 6 foot long by 4 foot wide, 6'5" to the peak. And this is constructed very inexpensively from 2x4 framing, which I'll show you, and uses, I would use 7/16 OSB or plywood. Either one would work for the siding on this. Now, a couple of the features here, I show this with dorm windows. The dorm windows are actually optional. You don't have to put dorm windows. You can just go with a flat roof surface if you want here. I show this with wood shingles, or you could use just plain old tar paper and roofing shingles. Any type of roofing shingles would work on this. Show it with a little flower box there just for effect. And on the backs and the front, I show this with these round windows, like boat-style windows, or you could put square windows. Either one works. I just like the effect of the round windows, the look of those in there. This does have an access panel on the back. Down here is an access panel. We'll just open this up so I can show you. Open up, take this one off. There we go. Now you can see inside the access panel. Underneath the seat and bed is storage, lots of storage underneath here for a propane tank, one of those Port-a-Loo porta-potties, an ice chest over there you can see. Okay, so there's good storage. This is about 18 inches high inside here and about 4 feet wide inside. So the structure, I'll show this with the door open. Let me just hide this door here. With the door open, you can see I've got this set up. Right now I've got it set up for seating. During the day, this would be used for seating purposes, okay? And I'm going to pull the side roof off here so I can show you inside. But this has a very nice space for a person that maybe is going to school or working, or just the table can be used for eating or whatever. So you've got approximately 6 feet of space on the inside here by 4 feet wide. And this table is actually part of the bed platform, which I'll show you. You just pull the 2x4 out, put it in one of these slots. It's in this 2x4 here. There's another one on the other side. You just drop the 2x4 into the slot, and then you take your bed panel and put it up on top of that, and then that becomes a table. Here you've got 2 foot by 4 foot cushions. There's three of these cushions that become your bed, or you can use a roll-up mattress pad underneath this that becomes your bed. But during the daytime, it becomes seating. It becomes a little mini couch in here, 4 foot wide. And now you've got a space for a student to do their studies, their work, or for having your meal, or if you're working on a hobby or a craft or something like that, you've got this nice little space. When you need to get out the door, you just lift the table up, put it back, put the 2x4 back in the bottom slots, put the table down, and, you know, then you turn it into a bed. And I'm going to show you what it looks like as a bed, too. So, good headroom in this. I really like that it's got a very good space. This is an average person, 5'8" tall. You can see you've got lots of headroom here. You've got these nice dormer windows, which would give you lots of light. Lots of light, and also gives you a little bit more headroom up in this area right in here. A 6-foot person could stand up in the middle of this quite comfortably. Two people could actually share, sit side by side on this couch, or you can put in another, you could pull your ice chest cooler out, or someone could put a foldable chair on the other side here. So you could actually have two people sitting side by side or crossways next to each other here. So lots of space in this little place. So let me show you what the framing looks like on this first. And I'll just have to zoom in on this. Now this is all done with 2x4 construction to keep it inexpensive and easy to build. And then I would sheathe it with either 7/16 inch OSB or plywood. Either one would work. Now it's got a floor frame, as you can see, made of 2x4s down here. Simple 2x4 frame, floor frame construction, and then your casters attached to the corners, not exactly in the corners, but they attach to the floor framing, and the casters have locks on them, so once you move this in place, you can just click on the locks and lock it in place so it won't be rolled around while the person is inside it. Now, this is the bed platform, and it has, this back platform is This back platform is 2'6" wide, and it is permanently connected. These are 1'9" wide platforms that can be raised up. And as you can see, these 2x4s right here, you put the 2x4 up in these other slots, and then you put these panels up on top, and they become either a table or a workspace. This one can go up here. This one can go on the end. It can go over the middle. So I gave you lots of options for the ways that you can organize this into workspace or living space as you need to use it. Very simple construction. It takes about 20 2x4s to build this. That's about it. And you're looking at about under $200 for all the material costs. And you could build one of these in a day. Seriously, you could build the complete unit in about a day. And now I'm going to show you on the inside how this can be used as a bed and also as a small business. So I'm just going to click off this. Okay, now I show this with the bed down, the door open so you can kind of get a peek inside here. Now, this is an uninsulated structure. You really don't need insulation in a small structure like this because the human body puts off about as much heat as a 90-watt light bulb. So in a small structure like this, your own body heat will actually heat it up. And for sleeping, you can either do these pads like this as mattress pads, or you can just get a sleeping bag pad or even an air cushion pad to go underneath it. A sleeping bag pad would work fine because you can roll it up and use it as your seating. And a good heavy-duty sleeping bag would be all you would need in order to sleep very comfortably in here. As long as you don't have the wind blowing on you or the rain drenching you or snow piling up on you, you'll sleep very comfortably in a small structure like this. Your own body heat will heat it up. You could add a heater to these, but it really isn't necessary in these small structures. So I'm going to pull off the side roof, and I'm going to show you how much space this has inside it for a bed. It actually has a very nice bed that will sleep either one or two people. Pull this off here. Just hide this. Now, this has a 4 foot wide by 6 foot long bed. So even an average person can sleep in here. Even a tall person, fairly tall person, could sleep in here comfortably without being cramped. And it's 4 foot wide, so that's a very wide bed that will actually sleep two people. Two people could sleep in this space, all right? And it's 6 foot wide, and it's 4 foot wide and 6 foot long. This person I show in here is about 5'8" tall, which is average height for most people. And here you can see the slots I was talking about. These platforms which I'll show you. I'll take the bed off now. These two platforms are removable with 2x4s underneath them. You just take the 2x4, you put it in the slots that go across here, and then put these platforms up on top to make your table. And you can actually do a table on either end or one in the middle for a desk and table. Now, the ones on the ends I'll show you are used if you want to run a small business out of here, or if you want to organize this in a different way so that if you're cooking, you could put one of these tables on this end or on this end, and you could set up your cooking supplies and you can take care of yourself. You can cook a meal inside this little place right here. So 4 foot wide, 6 foot long bed, and then very adaptable with these platforms of 2x4s. You can just put them up and you can reorganize this any way you want during the daytime for whatever function that you're going to be using. Again, it has storage space underneath the bed and seating. You've got that nice access panel for you. You've got storage underneath there. And I really like the space in here. This would be enough adequate space if in an emergency, let's say that a city has a disaster, a fire like they just had in Canada wipes out all these homes, or you have a tornado tear through a place, or you have flooding or something like that, which we've all seen in the news happens all the time, and suddenly churches are overrun with people that don't have housing. You know, if you had a bunch of these sitting around that would sleep at least two people, you could pull these out in a small area. You could set these up and people would at least have shelter for, you know, survival until they can get into houses bigger shelters or something like that. So that's another use for this type of structure here. So now I'm going to put the bed back on just to show you. And again, you can see this has really nice dormer windows. So you got really good light in this. And it's got an excellent sleeping space. It would be better for one person, but it would be adequate for two people. Okay? And, if you got little teeny kids with you, you could put, one adult and a couple of kids in there, too. You know, there's enough space in there to sleep comfortably, and you've got lots and lots of headroom. You're not going to bump your head or anything while you're sleeping. Doorway, 1 foot 6 inches wide, 5 foot 3 inches to the top up here. So lots and lots of good space in this. Now I'm going to show you how this can also be modified to be used as a small business. Okay, one thing I know about people that are homeless is they're also very creative, and a lot of them actually run little businesses in order to support themselves. A lot of them do recycling. They recycle cans and bottles and other stuff like that, or they pick up small appliances and stuff that they may find on the streets, or books or pictures or whatever, and they resell them, and that's how they support themselves. A lot of them are also very crafty people. They may make jewelry, or they may make wood crafts or something like that, or they may be artists. And so they have a way to support themselves, and so I think we ought to encourage that, because that helps them to develop sustainability. Not everybody is equipped to work in the regular workforce. Some people just aren't, but they're very industrious and can support themselves with a small business. And so I thought, well, this shack could also be used for setting up a small business. So what I did is I made this so that the window here can be hinged up, and I'll show this. The window on one of the dormers, or both, can be hinged up out of the way. And then you've got room here to put a sales counter or little platform here where this person is 5 foot 8 inches tall. A person can stand in this window and they can operate a small business. They can talk to customers, they can take money, whatever, working right out of this small shack. Now this doesn't necessarily have to be for homeless people. If you wanted to run a hot dog or hamburger stand or sell your crafts or your books or whatever you want to do with this, maybe it's a ticket stand, I don't know. This little shack could be very useful for a lot of different purposes. That's why I call it a multi-shack, is because it can be used for many different purposes. But this would be great for a homeless person that has a craft that they make or recycle products or whatever. They want to sell them. They just hinge up the window and they set themselves up a little business here to take care of customers. Now, this also shows inside how those tables can be reorganized. Here you can see I've lifted up the bed platform to put a table on this end, another table on this end, and you can use this for cooking in here. You can see I've got a little two-burner propane stove that you can set up on one of the tables up there so you can do your cooking. You can work on your crafts. This table just lifts off. The 2x4 lifts off if you need to get access to the door. Lots of good headroom, okay? Workspace in there. This can be modified many different ways for many different people of however you want to use it. So a very functional space in there. All right, so that is the multi-shack, all right? And let me just unhide this so you can get a better view of it. Again, can be built very inexpensively, around under $200 on casters, more expensive if you put it on a trailer. And I'm going to provide these plans for free because this is a project that I designed specifically for churches and nonprofit organizations to build shelters. And at present in the U.S., we have about 1.6 million homeless people that just need a simple shelter to live in. Or we have, that's about one out of 200 people. And that's just in the U.S. There's a lot of people in other countries that are in even worse shape. And I really think a project like this would be great for helping the homeless people to have shelter while maintaining their independence and their pride. But it could also be used as disaster relief shelters. You know, we could easily have a major disaster in a city where we have thousands and thousands of people that suddenly are homeless and we need to provide quick shelter. These would also work for that. It would be big enough space for two people to sleep and, you know, to take care of their basic needs. And that's what this structure is about. So I hope you like this design. It's called the Multi-Shack. You can get the plans for free on my website, simplesolarhomesteading.com. Up at the top, look at Multi-Shack. Now, there is a button there if you would like to donate. Your donations are used by me to design structures like this and build small houses. I work with a lot of homeless people that don't want to be in the system, that want to build their own off-grid cabins and houses and places like that. I help them with designs and building those projects. So any donation, if you can donate, is very appreciated and will help with those projects. All right, folks, I hope you like this project called the Multi-Shack, and have a great day.
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land. Okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash. This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, It cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater, and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well. Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. A freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions, and that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills, and then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children because you don't need a whole lot of space to start off with. This way you can save for it, build on as you want to, have the additions, have the extra room if that's what you want. Now, I live full-time in this cabin. I live by myself, but my girlfriend comes up here on the weekends, and we stay together, and let me tell you, it's perfectly comfortable. We don't feel cramped at all, and we'd much rather have a small place like this. It takes a lot less money to heat, takes a lot less money to cool, it's a lot easier to clean, it's just a fantastic home. Now, I'm not trying to push you into building a home exactly like mine. I'm just trying to provide you with some ideas. If you wanted to come up with different ideas, a different plan, that's just fine by me. But if you are interested in learning how to build a home like mine, I do have an ebook available and a printed book available called Simple Solar Homesteading. Go to www.simplesolarhomesteading.com. You can learn how to build a cabin like mine or at least get some great ideas for building your own home. Now I want to repeat, I own my land. I have a house that I built for under $2,000. I have a solar electric system that I have for under $3,000. I use propane, which costs me under $200 a year. I have no house payments. I have no utility bills. If you want a life like this, it is very possible. You can stop listening to the media, and you can stop being put under society's pressures to live in the type of houses that everyone tells you you have to live in. You can live very inexpensively, and you can do this at any age, whether you're older or younger. If you're younger and you start in a place like this, imagine the amount of money that you would have to retire on, with no house payments, no utility bills, and freedom. Thank you for joining me, folks. Please watch the rest of my videos for more detailed information on each of the systems and a complete walkthrough of the cabin.
All right. Let's see. Today, what do we have as a title? Making Something Out of Nothing, which I guess we're going to be doing with some people. And also Camping 101. So what do I have in my program notes here? Now, this is based on 2 Kings 1, 4 through 7. When you're faced with making something out of nothing, one of the first steps you need to take is, or doing the impossible, one of the first steps you got to take is take inventory of your resources. And that your first resource is you. The second one is time. And then we can go on there, you know, talent, you know, stuff like that. Let's see. Focus on your abundance, not your lack, which most people, they focus on what they don't have instead of focusing on what they do have. Let's see. One thing, it's a couple of things for people that, if you're, all right, particularly, well, how can I put it? If you're going to move to a rural area, or, you know what, no, it's not so much rural. If you want to, let's say, you like the idea of eliminating your electric bill, your water bill, your utility bills. And when I say utility bills, I'm not including phone, but I'm, you know, basically electricity, those three things, those utilities in those forms. Okay. Then it's two topics that we're going to make available to people for training and camping 101, because there are different distinctions or different types of camping. I've gone Euro camping. Euro camping is comfortable. Okay. But that's different from, I remember in college, we had a class assignment. It required one night of camping in Palo Duro Canyon in Texas. So you had to pitch a tent that basically, well, it was a crude floor. I mean, it was a piece of canvas. I had to get rid of a spider before I went to sleep. But we were at the floor of Palo Duro Canyon, and I got through. Well, we all got through that, man, as much as students and the professor. And then we had to make our own stove and cook our own breakfast that morning and all that. Anyway. So that type of roughing it camping, we were roughing it. Roughing it camping, Euro camping. Then there's, you know, some parents send their kids to day camp. Now they got all kind of camps. You have basketball camp, soccer camp, computer camp or whatever. But day camp where you might learn how to, you know, hunt for arrowheads, go fishing, boating, tell ghost stories. I remember Hatchet Harry and Bloody Mary, those stories. And they tell you those stories about like a lake or a pond, and it, as dusk was setting in. It's pretty, you know, be kind of scared at night. But that's the whole part of the experience. Then there's military camping, which is very efficient. So anyway, Camping 101, that'll be a series, because I realize with some people don't know how to camp. Some people have never been camping. And like I say, there are different distinctions. I mean, there's urban camping in the city. There's car camping. So there are different distinctions of camping. So we'll expose as many as we can, but, you know, and we'll have to bring in other people who, Like, I know nothing about military camping because I wasn't in the military. But we've got at least two people in our family that do. And then Renewable Energy 101, which deals with, like, if you want to eliminate your electric bill, it'll be helpful if you learn something about solar energy. That sun power, it's like in 1 hour, the sun beams enough energy to the earth to basically meet all the electrical needs or electrical power needs of the entire planet, 8 billion people and counting, for an entire year. That's just in 1 hour. But most of us do not know how to capture that solar energy and convert it into things that we might need, for daily living. Like, charging your phone, playing your flat screen TV, having electricity on in your house. Most of us do not know how to capture that. So, and you capture it through solar panels. You can heat your home. Like, I have a solar hot water system where I'm at right now. So any hot water in here, is heated up by the sun. So renewable energy, and that includes, because if you know what renewable energy is and how to harness it, which is sun, wind, and water, those three primary things, if you know how to harness those three, you can eliminate your water bill today if you wanted to. I mean, you'll get billed from whatever power company that you're with right now. But you can, if you go straight off the grid. But depending on where you are and depending on what your power needs are, okay, solar can be inexpensive if you're frugal, or it can be expensive if you're not so frugal. All right. So, and it's also part of a lifestyle. A lot of people that go solar almost really don't need it. If they live up north, when it gets a little cool outside, they'll put on a sweater. Some people, they don't want to put on a sweater. They want to live in Michigan or Alaska in December and walk around with a T-shirt and shorts on in the dead of winter. Okay. Which means they're going to need more fuel to heat their place up. Now, that's biomass. Now, that's a whole different thing. But that's part of renewable energy, too. I had a guest on here some years ago, and just a time difference, because they had this time difference between here and Uganda. But Julius Magali, he was on here, and he mentioned now what they do in many parts of Uganda, at least, is, all right, they determine, now this is a cultural thing, or at least, well, it's cultural. Particularly if you live in a rural area and you have solar, and totally off-the-grid solar, because you can get grid-tied solar, which you're tied to a local utility company, or you can have totally 100% off-the-grid solar where you have your own battery pack. It's just like a cell phone. Each and every cell phone, a smartphone that we're on, has a battery. Once that battery runs down to a certain point, you've got to recharge it. So you can have a solar system that generates electricity that runs the same way, just like your phone. All right? So what he was talking about, people who have a solar lifestyle, not only in Uganda, but in different parts of the world, they think about it and say, how many hours do I need to use electricity? Do I need 2 hours worth? Do I need 4 hours worth? You know, if a person has a, you know, they live in Kampala and they have a 9-to-5 job or 10-to-6 jobs or whatever it is, all right, they determine, all right, well, when I come home, I might need 2 hours, 2 or 3 hours, or, and I might need an hour in the morning. So they might need about 4 hours a day. 1 in the morning before work, 3 when they come home. All right, total of 4 hours for the entire day. And they bait, and then everything's unplugged. No phantom, no, what do they call it, vampire power, sealers, or nothing like that. So they basically, you know, that's it. Whereas over here in the United States, some people don't even, you know, it's just, they leave the house and, you know, everything's plugged in. The lights might not be on, but, you know, you're still losing, I think they call it vampire power or phantom power or something like that, where you're still, you know, using electricity, particularly if you've got a central AC system or central heating system. But that's the way they do it. They determine how many hours of power do they need. I haven't heard anything past 4 yet. I'm sure there are some exceptions. But 4 hours, so in that 4 hours, they're doing what they need to do as far as homework, if they have kids, dinner, whatever, you know, whatever you do during, whatever you use electricity for, they account 4 hours a day for that. At least he did. So, Renewable Energy 101, well, we're going to have to educate and train people on that. And Camping 101, because, you know, you have to be aware of the different types of camping. And then what is the best type of camping that is going to fit your particular situation if you decide to get something that's off the grid? All right. Now, a lot of people are addicted to the grid. So, you know, all I'm saying is it won't matter to them. I also suggest there is a video on YouTube that I highly recommend. It's called The Story of Stuff. Story of Stuff, because many people have too much stuff in their lives. Now, I'm talking about stuff in the place where you live, your house, your apartment, your bedroom, or whatever. Too much stuff, and for some reason they don't want to part with it. Or we just like buying stuff. You know, the person who likes to buy, that likes to have a lot of shoes in the closet. I've had friends where they had a closet, actually more than one closet, full of shoes, and they hadn't even wore half of them. But that stuff. So The Story of Stuff, I highly recommend. It's on YouTube. And I highly recommend it. You get a hold of your finances, you're going to have to, most people are going to have to scale back some kind of way. And then let's see if I can find it. I'll play the Tiny House Family. Matter of fact, I'm going to try to find that now before I go to the phone lines.
Imagine living in a space that measures a mere 168 square feet, more than 14 times smaller than the average American home. Well, it is here inside this tiny house where the proud owners are discovering that less is so much more.
Well, in the past year, we've managed to save everything that I earn. We use my husband's income for our living expenses, and I've been teaching public school, so that's about $3,000 a month that we've put in the bank this year.
Hari, her husband Carl, and their two young kids, Archer and Ella, recently celebrated their one-year anniversary in their tiny house. After losing their 1,500-square-foot home to financial struggles, the couple took matters into their own hands, literally. They built this space themselves with just $13,000 in materials. Their goal? To become debt-free and save enough to one day build a new home, mortgage-free. And so far, they're right on track.
Things are going really well with the next project. We're going to build a 16 by 24 unit to begin with, and then we'll branch off of that and add bedrooms.
You may remember seeing this family on The Anderson Show earlier this year, where I joined them on stage. Fascinated by their story, our financially fit team flew down to Virginia to see for ourselves and learn ways we can all downsize.
How are you?
Hey, really good.
Good to see you. Hey there.
Living in the tiny house has taught me that we don't need much at all to be happy, and that getting the things that we need can actually be a lot of fun.
Can you get me a bowl and some scissors?
The family's fruit and vegetable garden lets them eat healthier, cut down on their carbon footprint, and slash their grocery bill by as much as 30%. Hari has also been upcycling, as she calls it, taking something old and breathing new life into it.
My favorite upcycling project was the rugs I made for the house. I took old sheets, flat sheets, and crocheted them into rugs. They're beautiful, and they fit the house a lot nicer than if we had gone and bought something new from the store.
The couple also recently switched jobs, not for more money, but more happiness. Carl is enjoying better working conditions at a new restaurant, and Hari left teaching to pursue a career in nonprofit. Being able to afford a career that you love and pursuing a passion rather than a paycheck, they've learned, is just an added benefit to having savings and no debt.
I'm probably taking a 25 to 30% cut in my salary, which is going to enable me to have more time to actually build the house and save money because I'll be the contractor.
It's really a great feeling to be able to make a decision like that, not based on money, but based on what we want to be doing with our time.
The kids also seem keen to the transition. Mom and Dad are happy to report fewer requests for video games or toys now that Ella and Archer are busy playing outdoors on their 3-acre property.
We play down by the creek and up at the big tree up there where the swing is. We play with our neighbors and ride bikes.
There's a lot of different things they can do with their time besides play with plastic toys and get online.
They've really just embraced it wholeheartedly. You can't stop them from having a good time outside.
Still another lesson, when you downsize, it helps to have a support system.
There's such a wealth of knowledge in our community, and that helps us a lot. And having that support makes it like we're doing it together. Moving to the country has given us a lot of things, not just the tiny house.
So, what do you think? What are your thoughts about living in a tiny house? Would you ever do it? Connect with me on Twitter at Farnoosh and use the hashtag FinFit. For Yahoo Finance, I'm Farnoosh Tarabi.
Okay, now, a lot of this tiny house living, there's some exceptions, will be in the country, as you just heard the woman say. Not all of it. I mean, we had a guest on here maybe about 2 months ago, 3 months ago. Troy Ansel. I get his name mixed up. Anyway, out in Oakland, California. Now, he lives in the city of Oakland, California proper, and in his backyard, he's got two tiny houses, and he does pretty well financially by renting those out. $9,000 to $10,000 a month. Now, our boots on the ground flagship city at the moment is Jacksonville, Florida. So, and you can follow along with me on it. Type into any search engine, largest, most populated cities in the United States. Plug that into any search engine. Let's take a look at what's happening. Okay. All right, the Jacksonville. Well, before we get to Jacksonville, the largest city in the United States, and we're going by what they have here, New York City, got over 8 million people. Now, this is the city proper. We're not even talking about the metro area. Matter of fact, but while it's on my mind, largest metropolitan areas, U.S. All right, we'll take a look at that secondly. Okay, all right, now. So New York City is number one, Los Angeles with 3.8 million. Number two, Chicago is number three at 2.7 million. Excuse me, 2.6 million. They've lost some people. Matter of fact, New York has lost people, Los Angeles has lost people, and Chicago has lost people, despite this fact that they have well over a million people in those cities. Houston, Texas, lost less than 1%. Phoenix, Arizona, has over 1,600,000 people. Now they've gone up over 2%. People are retiring. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, has over 1.6 million people, over 1.5 million people. San Antonio, Texas, it's got over a million people. San Diego, California, over 1.3 million. Dallas, Texas, is 1.2 million. Now, let me point this out, because these are the current stats we have here. There are over 108,000 towns in the United States. That's towns that have maybe a population of one or two people, to New York City with over 8 million people. All right. Now, according to the stats I'm looking at right now, for the city proper, out of those 108,000 towns in the United States, only nine have a population of 1 million people or more. Only nine out of over 108,000. Now, coming up on the heels of knocking at the door of a million, the 10th largest city in the United States is Austin, Texas. It has 974,447 people. And the 11th most populated city proper, in the United States is Jacksonville, Florida. Jacksonville, Florida, which had a 2% increase in population growth, Jacksonville is knocking at the door of a million, too. Jacksonville has 971,319 people. So it's knocking at the door of a million. Now, behind that, you got San Jose with over 900,000. Fort Worth, Texas, over 900,000. And Columbus, Ohio, has over 900,000. That comes in at number 14. But Jacksonville is number 11. Now, that's with the city proper. Let's go take a look at metro areas. Okay. let's see what we're working with. Okay, New York, one, L.A., two, Chicago, three, Dallas, Fort Worth is four, Houston is five. Now, the DMV, Washington, D.C., Arlington, Virginia, West Virginia, not the whole state of West Virginia, Alexandria, they're coming in at number five with over 6 million people. Philadelphia is number seven. Hotlanta is number eight with over 6 million people. That's Metro. Miami, Fort Lauderdale, West Palm Beach, over 6 million. All right, I don't see Jacksonville in here. Where does Jacksonville rank? Okay, I'm looking for, matter of fact, let me just pull up Jacksonville, that'll be quicker. Jacksonville, Florida, okay. Jacksonville, Florida. All right, Jacksonville, Florida is ranked 11th largest. It's the largest city in Florida by population, 11th most populated city in the United States, number 11, and number 37. Let me go on my other list here. Let me see if I can find them. All right. Depends on who you look at. Some have them listed at number 37 as far as metro area, and then or number 38. All right. And when it comes to that, they have the metro area of Jacksonville has over 1.6 million people. Okay. And part of that goes into the state of Georgia. All right. So, in these areas that have a million or more people, you're going to find the expensive rents. And if you drive just a short distance from those places, you know, your cost of living can dramatically drop. You know, you can half what you're paying in rent if you just, you know, drive 30 minutes, 45 minutes, maybe an hour. You know, maybe it's 2 hours. Like now, in the case of Jacksonville, you go 90 minutes outside of Jacksonville and probably less, depending on what, you know, you have to look at a radius. But I know for a fact, 90 minutes outside of Jacksonville, that's an hour and a half. You know, for what you're paying in rent, and matter of fact, oh, let me look at it like this. Okay, you have let's say you're paying $1,000 a month in rent in some place in Jacksonville. I know for a fact if you drive within a 90-minute radius of Jacksonville, you can, Jesus, own, let's see, probably 20 acres of land. 20 football fields where you can put up your own place. And for what you know, we're going to bring that up Tuesday when we have our meeting. But now, let me say this. Okay, at the same time, you can get more value for your money. Value is very subjective because 90 minutes away, depending on what direction you go into of Jacksonville, all right, You're not going to have that bus line that you have in Jacksonville. So if you don't have a car and you rely on city transportation like the bus, you're not going to have that. Number two, you're not going to call Uber or Lyft because they're not 90 miles in, you know, the place I'm thinking about. You know, there are no Lyft or Uber drivers in those areas. Okay. If you want to go to Whole Foods or a grocery store or something like that, well, if you want to go to Whole Foods, like the upscale shopping place for food or groceries, yeah, you're not going to find it 90 miles or 90 minutes away from, in most cases, outside of Jacksonville. Although there are grocery stores where you can buy everything you normally do. You know, it won't be, you know, all prettied up or packaged pretty like Whole Foods, but hey, you know. So now if you want to go to the Opera Hall or all these, because basically these big cities are really temples of consumption. A millionaire can spend, you can go broke in a day in these densely populated areas if you have, you know, spending habits that you don't have in check. You know, it's amazing, you know, if you just get in the habit of buying a bag of chips, potato chips, in a little small bag, snack bag, you know, and then let's say you're in the habit of, matter of fact, the inspiration for this podcast, It's My House, the squatter, they had a habit of buying 7-Eleven, going to 7-Eleven every single morning and buying coffee. Nothing wrong with that, but they were broke. Now, in my opinion, just my opinion, because I can't tell grown folks how to live, you know, it would have been easier and less expensive if you go to the grocery store, buy you, now you can do this a few ways. For me, I'm good with instant coffee. You know, dip the spoon in or rip open a little packet, pour it in with some hot water. I like cream and sugar with mine. Actually, I like a lot of sugar and a lot of cream in my coffee when I drink it. I'm good. All right. Now, but other people, they don't like instant coffee. Other people have to do the beans. So they have a coffee machine and they, you know, the filters and the beans and all that. And, I think that's a better choice. But this particular person, okay, and then when it came to pay the electric bill, they couldn't pay it. When it came to pay, you know, they were using the internet and a telephone, they didn't have the money to pay it. So whatever it costs, matter of fact, what does a cup of coffee cost at 7-Eleven? Because I know some people go into 7-Eleven and they bring a, you know, big old thermos up in there. Let me see. Cost a cup of coffee. And then you got your Dunkin' Donuts people. But her thing was 7-Eleven coffee. All right. Cost of 7-Eleven coffee. And I like 7-Eleven coffee. I like it. Let's see. Cost of all right, 7-Eleven coffee, they got a dollar on here? All right, dollar coffees will cost $2 after October the 4th, they say. Okay, wait a minute. 7-Eleven special prices. Now, I know if you go to Starbucks, it's real easy to drive $5 on coffee. Okay, let's see. Coffee. All right, Coffee 7-Eleven, Costa Rica. Man, I wish they would put prices on it. All right, order now. I'm just trying to get a price. I'm not trying to actually order. Okay. Man. Okay. I just saw something for $2.49. Okay. So $2.49 times 30 days, $74.70. They could have paid the cable bill had they just, and still have coffee. Okay, get you a bottle of Maxwell House or whatever's out there. Or, like I say, matter of fact, let's go to Amazon. Let's go to Amazon. And, because some people, once again, they don't want, it's blasphemy if they don't do instant. They do not do it. So let's look at a coffee machine. Well, a coffee maker, as they call it. All right. So a coffee maker. Now here's what we have here. Here's one for $149. Now this is for the barista's coffee system, espresso machine combo. So if you want to go high end, there's $159. Not too bad, okay. That's for the serious person because they're not going to touch instant coffee or 7-Eleven coffee. They're not touching it, all right. Now, but she likes 7-Eleven coffee, all right. So, she's good with. Now, here's another one, a Black & Decker coffee maker, $34.99, $35. Here's another one. $34. Here's another one, Mr. Coffee, Mini Brew Switch Coffee, $24.99, $25. So she could have bought a coffee maker, and, of course, you got to have the coffee to go along with it. Got that, plus have money to pay on the cable bill. Here's another one for $40. And then prices all in between. Here's one for $18. $18.99. An Elite Gourmet Automatic Brew and Dip Coffee Maker. $18. Well, let's say just 20 with the tax. Here's another one for $29. Another one for $45. So essentially, of course you can go up and up in price. Yeah, here's one for $20, another one for $19.70. And a lot of times people are paying for the experience. Maybe she liked walking to the store, 7-Eleven every morning. I mean, that's an experience for someone. When people go to Whole Foods, you can buy an ear of corn anywhere you want. But people are going in the Whole Foods grocery shopping. They like the ambiance of Whole Foods. They like the – Whole Foods is basically selling an experience. As basic as it is, walking to 7-Eleven or going into 7-Eleven, and I like 7-Eleven coffee, okay? When I go to an airport, typically when I go to an airport, I'm going to get a Starbucks coffee, venti. Give me the large one. Because it's all part of my airport experience. I haven't been to the airport in about 4 years now. So next time I go, I'm stopping by Starbucks, man. on the way out and coming on the way back in, I'm going to get another one. But these days I don't fly that much. I haven't caught a plane in 4 years. But where I have to have that experience. so to speak. All right. So when it comes to making something out of nothing, you need to take a look at your resources and don't concentrate on what you lack. Concentrate on what you have. Like in this case, this woman could have paid her cable bill or internet bill or what have you. Coffee. Had she just stopped for a moment and looked at, all right, what are my resources? What do things cost? And then you'll be surprised when you think you have nothing. When you stop looking at your lack, then you can see your abundance. That's when you can start to see your abundance. Okay. That's my rant for today. Let's see. Robin, you there?
I'm here.
Okay. Anything you want to add on?
No.
Okay. We have a little team meeting at, you already know that time, so. Okay, well, on that note, let's see. You know what? Let's play the RV family.
Michelle.
Hi.
We're here in Eugene, Oregon.
We are.
You're living in a camper in a church parking lot.
I am.
Tell me about that.
Well, I had an apartment for about 6 months, and didn't work out so well, so it was a mutual termination, and I couldn't find an apartment in the time that I had before I was to move out, so I did the next best thing. I looked for an RV on Craigslist. I had to have a roof for my kids for a little bit longer, and last time I was homeless, I had the van, and it was okay, but for four people, it was a little tight. So I figured, you know, I'd have electricity, I'd have all that. I grew up in a mobile home, so an RV wasn't going to be so hard. So I thought, it's when they're bigger, it's harder because it's tighter. But we're doing it. We took off for the mountains for a while and tried that and didn't work out so well. It was beautiful. Would you think the weather's bad here? The weather up there is more unpredictable. We woke up to about 2 inches of snow one morning and we started a fire and it was beautiful, but it was too much to get the kids to the actual school bus stop because we were not on the school bus, the bus line. So,
how many kids?
I have four altogether, two are grown, I guess you might call them grown. We got one that's about to be 18 on the 12th of July, and Mr. Fisherman, which is the 9-year-old. So, I have two left.
And you're saying your income was cut by a third because of health issues?
It was. I've been putting myself on the back burner for a lot of years, you know, taking care of the kids. And I've had three jobs at one point. This time, you know, something started hurting me in my legs, and I just said, forget it. I'm not thinking about anybody but myself, and went to the doctor the next day.
Well, before you found this parking program, what was it like?
It was stressful. It was stressful because I didn't want to do the whole moving around town. You know, just, you know, oh, this spot's okay to sleep. Or, you know, we can only be here for a little bit of time. So I really didn't want to do that. That's one of the reasons why I took off to the mountains. Because I just wanted to park it and be. That's just, I just wanted to be and not be bothered and ridiculed when, you know, facts are not even, they're not even apparent. But yeah.
So what's your future like? What are you doing to get out of this?
Oh, actually, my son is ADHD, the 9-year-old, and I applied for SSI for him and I both because they couldn't figure out what it was that was causing the pain, and I've been having pain in my neck and my shoulders for about 15 years now, so I knew it was going to come to a head eventually, and so I decided to file for SSI for both of us, and trying to get a lawyer for a child is really, really difficult. It took me about 5 or 6 phone calls before I found one that would take a child. It would take me, but not him. And that's not what I needed. So depending on what the outcome of that, I have to stay off for a full year, which I'm still going to physical therapy and such, in order for my SSI case to persevere.
If you had 3 wishes, what would they be?
A home. I don't need much. I really don't need much. I don't even... I can't even think of anything besides that. So, the other things are all really easy, doable.
Well, thank you very much for talking to me.
You're welcome.
Robin, if you're there, what do you think about that story?
I don't know. I'm sorry.
She was living in an RV. She went to a shelter, but she had a child with it, so. She had no choice but to live. Well, I can't say no, but she decided to live in an RV, so. Which many people are doing. So, matter of fact, let's say that there are homeless women out there right now with a homeless pair, because they got men too. And they couldn't get into a shelter. What are some alternatives that you think they could take to get a roof over their head?
So, when the shelters are full, sometimes they have, depending on the weather, there might be an overflow. It's really, really difficult. You really have to build up your social capital so that you have alternatives when the shelters are full.
And so, you're absolutely right. But you know what the problem is, particularly out here in the United States, is a lot of people are so independent-minded, they don't have any social capital. They can get it again, but, you know, you got to build up social capital, you know, one person at a time.
You have to build it. So it's not that easy to just go out and get, especially the doors closed, shelters, we're full. What are you going to do then? So people need to change their minds, and they need to realize that people need people. It actually does take a village. Yes, it does.
Right.
So, you know, you have to get with it, because if you have social capital, then your possibilities can become endless. When I began building social capital, it didn't even matter that I was homeless, because I was able to draw on resources and of my social capital that I was off the street before I got my voucher and my you know. When I didn't get into the shelter.
We need to teach a series on that.
Yep. Sometimes when I didn't get into a shelter, I would have to find find things to do to occupy my time and stay safe. So one of the things that I did when I stayed at the Salvation Army shelter, I was there for 7 months, and you could only be in there from 7 p.m. at night till 10 the next morning. So if you were late, if you didn't make it, then you were out for that night, and you might even lose your spot if that happens.
Right.
So what I would do during the daytime is I enrolled in college in the next city over. So I would have to get up and get on the early bus first thing in the morning and ride to the next city, take my classes. Come now, when I get out of class, now it's lunchtime. So I would come back and come back to the town that my shelter's in. I still have about 3, 4, 5 hours before it's time, before I can get in. So I would go to the library and do my homework from school, right? And that and then maybe go hang out a little bit or whatever. Now it's 7 o'clock, you know. Now it's 6 o'clock. Now I can make my way, you know, up the hill, and wait in line for them to open the doors at 7. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so you find things at night. I found a bus with a. That went from one end of the town to the other end of the town, and it would take like 4 hours, right, to complete the whole route. So I would play my little fare and hop on that bus and ride, and I'd be warm. I'd be safe, you know, not loitering nowhere, okay? You know? You have to be real, real creative, because you have to stay alive, and you have to stay safe, and you have to stay hydrated, and you have to eat.
Right. Now, let me ask, I guess you caught a cat nap or two on the bus.
Yes, in the back. I would sit all the way in the back, and I would prop my feet up against the floor, against the front seat, and then I would take my hands and prop them up under my butt so I wouldn't rock or move, you know, and just kind of lock myself in like that, lean against that window, and go to sleep.
Now, what about...
And I would pick that very last seat, because I've had people touching, messing with me, thinking it's funny.
Okay.
Oh yeah, I went off on this one dude. I socked the heck out of this guy. Surely did. Mm-hmm.
Now in places like New York City, and maybe in Seattle too, there are people that do that. They get on a bus, particular bus lines, and they're there, practically. I mean, that's their bedroom, so to speak, or sleeping what accommodations.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was going to ask you a question. Social capital. So now you were enrolled in school, so I guess you were building social capital during class and all that type of stuff, after, you know, hanging out at the student lounge and all that?
No, I actually didn't. I was kind of like laser focused, and so I would, and I had a routine, so I would have to get back to, you know, to Seattle so I could get back into the shelter on time, you know, like that. And so I wasn't going to do anything that was going to deviate off of that schedule for me to even have the possibility to be late. I wasn't going to do it. Mm-hmm.
What about building social capital with other people in the shelter? Because eventually everybody leaves the shelter. I mean, the idea of meeting somebody on it that you know, like,
so,
and all
yeah,
that.
So one
in
lady,
there, and you,
one lady left the shelter and she got a place, and then so we used to get passes, overnight passes.
Mm-hmm.
That would allow us to stay out, and then she would let us stay over at her house, and we could take a shower, didn't have to worry about rules or, you know, anything like that. Yeah, you know,
What about people that are in the shelter, and maybe two of them or two, three, four of them pool their money and then get a house together?
Okay, see, so that's the thing. If you give them the opportunity, this is why I keep telling you we need to partner with programs and things like that. The YWCI, the Rescue Missions, Catholic Community Services. You understand? Shelter system. Right? Because then we go in and we tell them, hey, we teach you how to build, da, 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 da. And now we can insert to those people, you guys can pull your money and get together and build and have your own community and everything. You see? Does
right.
that make sense? Yeah?
Yeah, because like I said, if you meet some people in the shelter that you like,
been in a shelter, and they do bring, like they used to bring in from the YWCA, Dress for Less, Dress for Success.
Mm-hmm.
It's a program where they donate suits and business attire for women, and then they would put them on racks and bring them to the shelters, and then the women could pick out whatever, because some women were actually worked and had corporate jobs, you see?
Right.
And so that's how I know that we can bring in, if you have stuff, anything that's for the greater good of the community is always going to be a win. So you reach out to these community directors in these centers and shelter systems, and you say, hey, blah, blah, blah. And if then when you get in front of them, say, hey, we'd like to give you classes to teach you people how to build, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then they'll also have an opportunity to build their own, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then when we have the classes and we have them in class, that's when we can get them to form as groups and group together to build. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Let's see.
Holding classes is the key, and we need to connect with already existing agencies, such as shelters, community service agencies, social service agencies. Am I making sense to you?
Yeah. Well, we got one that contacted us already, so we'll start
yeah.
there.
Yeah, so but that's always going to be a win because why? Because there's always going to be an influx of people. We don't have to sell or convince anyone, and they have the facility and all of that. They might even have the facility for us to build, to meet, greet, and build.
Yeah. They could.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, we'll start off with the one we have. So.
You know, I'm going to get a hold of. There's a big community center in Seattle. They've got an after school program. There's the women and family, women and children's shelter. And at the Women and Children's Center, they have what court accredited. You know how some people are court ordered and mandated
right.
to attend classes and stuff. They have court approved classes and courses and stuff there, education. So that's a place that I know if we went in there. Once we fully develop and we have our curriculum, is that what it is? Once we completely develop our curriculum, I'm going to go to them and instill that, okay, at the community center, make it open for all, especially children from the age of 8 and up. I would like to say 6, but 8 and up.
Man, nothing
yeah.
wrong with 6. Like, if you, like I said, if you could look at,
yeah, but 6
you know,
is,
like a,
is,
a Chinese,
that,
a Chinese carryout.
Yeah.
They'll, you know, you see 3 or 4 generations in those places.
Yeah, but there, it's in our culture. It's not, no, they're going to need to be 8, especially if they're boys.
Okay, well.
Yeah.
All right, well, it is 15 past the hour of 12, so we're going to wrap it up today. We have teleconference call for at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 5 p.m. Central, and whatever it is out on the West Coast.
Yes.
And that's today. And let's see, next Tuesday we have a live Boots on the Ground event in Jacksonville in preparation for all practical purposes. 2024. So we're building momentum before the year, way before before Christmas, before Thanksgiving.
And we've got a prayer list going for. I'm not going to say what it is specifically, but we have a prayer list going. So let's always keep uplifted. The needs from the people participating in Abiding Faith Housing Ministry. Okay?
Okay.
There are some pressing needs and always needs, you know, daily needs, all of that. So let's always just be mindful and include them in your prayers, in your daily prayers, and in your consistent prayers, your never ceasing prayers. Okay? Yes. Thank you.
Right. Okay. And all right. Well, that's all for today. On that note, everyone have a good rest of the day. See you guys tomorrow.